Welcome.
This is the Ace of Clubs. I'm Jacob.
And I'm Colby. We are your hosts, friends, and depressed comrades.
It's a podcast where the two of us, with no formal expertise beyond our overabundance of seminary education, discuss various books from different genres. We're going to try uploading new episodes monthly, but no promises.
This season, we're going through all those classic dystopia sci-fi books that are no longer quite as fictional as we'd like to think.
As always, we assume your familiarity with the book we are discussing. Now enjoy as you listen to our ramblings and appreciate this completely generic intro.
All right, we're back to episode 2 now of The Ace of Clubs. We officially have a name. Thank you for everyone who sent in ideas and voted.
Yes, if we talk as though we have a large fan base and people contribute, people will think we have a large fan base to join.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a wonderful strategy.
That's how it works. Just got to provide the misinformation. Anyway, my name is Michael, and my co-host here is
Jacob.
And we are two MDivs, myself in Hebrew Bible more specifically, and Jacob in historical theology. This is a podcast. Basically a book club.
We always say that to be clear. We have no literary background. We are not experts.
Yep.
We just like books.
Yeah, we like to read. Yeah, we have no expertise. We're not lit majors or even political science majors or anything.
Turns out that would have been helpful for this podcast. But
yeah, at least for this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and last week we hit up Brave New World, got all up in Huxley's Dome, and this week we're moving on to Orwell. Though 1984 is taking a back seat for now, we're going to hit up Animal Farm first.
You know, kind of the condensed version of 1984, and with animals.
Yeah, more child-friendly, we'll say.
I guess compared to 1984, yes, that's true.
Yeah, you don't have animals having sex is like rebellion against the government.
But maybe we should.
Is that one of your topics for today?
No, it's not. I didn't write that down. Yeah, I hadn't connected those dots, but it kind of makes me want to reread through the book and see if there's a subtext there. So we start this podcast after introducing it awkwardly, like we always do so far the second time. Quick summary. Try to shoot for a minute, but it's just as quick as you can. I guess since Michael started, I get to do the first summary. Animal Farm starts out on this farm called Manor Farm, and you have all these animals that are being abused by their human owners, which are supposed to represent the capitalists who are just extracting wealth from the workers, which are the animals. Animals are like, this is BS. They have a specific animal pig named Major who gives them this outline for this wonderful animal-ran socialist utopia. So they rebel, kick the humans out. Basically, the pigs become in charge because they're the smartest animals. You initially have one named Napoleon, one named Snowball, but apparently Napoleon is smarter and more nefarious than Snowball, so he kicks Snowball out. Napoleon basically takes control of the entire farm and sort of turns it into this horrible authoritarian dystopia where the animals are working even harder and getting even less while the pigs get fat, enjoy the excess, and it gets to a point where eventually you basically can't tell the humans and pigs apart. That's how the book ends.
Spoilers.
We assume you've read the book.
Yeah. All right. Mine is, there's a farm, animals being oppressed. Old pig called Old Major is like, yo, this is whack. And he has a vision. And then the animals like straight up rebel and run off all the people. And then it turns out pigs suck and we're right to eat them. And yeah, they end up oppressing everybody much worse than the humans ever did. And yeah, like you said, eventually gets to a point where you can't tell the difference between the humans they originally rebelled against and the pigs who kind of helped lead the rebellion.
And apparently that's not a metaphorical thing. Like, they're actually watching humans and pigs in the same room and, like, mm-hmm. They look the same.
Yeah. This should wait for the first topic and we talk about what represents what. My understanding was the humans represented the Tsars and...
Yeah.
Everything before the Bolshevik Revolution. But
my understanding is that the humans are a little bit more nuanced than that.
All right. Well,
but it's also an allegory, so we can just start making that up whatever we want.
Yeah. That's what my lit professors did.
So now we get to the part where we basically tell you a bunch of stuff that you could Google yourself about the book and the author. First, George Orwell, which I didn't look up his real name. Oh, Eric Arthur Blair.
Mm-hmm. George Orwell was a good choice to like switch his name to.
Yeah, could you imagine that kind of
Blairian?
Eric Arthur Blairian. That's so Blairian. Yeah.
I'm going to start saying that.
That's Blairian. See who the real nerds are. Yeah, but he was English. He was like a democratic socialist. I mean, the most memorable thing to me and the most important thing in my mind is that he went and participated in the Spanish Civil War, which looking over the authors that we've decided to do like this first season, he definitely seems like the most badass one. Definitely seems much more hardcore than Huxley. But he fought the Spanish Civil War, which if you know anything about the Spanish Civil War, the USSR kind of screwed over a bunch of other leftist organizations in the Spanish Civil War, which probably colored a lot of how George Orwell saw Soviet Russia and Stalin specifically.
Boy was born 1903, lived through 1950, so only made it to 47, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
And Jacob here has read the Homage to Catalonia, I believe it was.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know if I explained enough details about it for everyone to understand how Russia screwed over a bunch of other people, but whatever.
Yeah, they did that.
Read the book. It's a good book. You read this, you read Homage to Catalonia. More so 1984, you read 1984 and you're like, see where he got this by reading Amish Catalonia.
Yeah, and I cannot stop coughing. Got a tickle in my throat.
A little tickle. That's good audio.
Yep, only the highest quality here in my living room.
The highest quality hacking.
Yep.
Is what we will tolerate. For instance, we're not talking about 1984 yet, but you'll learn that rats and the main character disliking rats is a thing. Well, Orwell also hated rats, and he talks about how horrible rats were during the Spanish Civil War, like out in the trenches.
Mm.
I don't know, just little things like that. Or like misinformation campaigns during the Spanish Civil War, which matter for Animal Farm too. Just a good book. Homage to Catalonia.
That's pretty much most things about him. He was born in India, actually under like British India control.
And did he work there for a little while too? As like a,
mm-hmm.
like a cop or something?
Yeah, which I think might have been where he first started kind of getting disenfranchised.
Disillusioned.
Disenfranchised works too.
Does it? I don't know. Was he enfranchised at some point?
I mean, he was a cop.
Okay. We know words. Yeah, disillusioned, disenfranchised, whatever. Yeah, he started persuaded that maybe being a cop wasn't awesome.
Yeah, okay, maybe disenfranchised isn't the best word. You know what I meant, though.
I did know what you meant. That's true, which isn't that what matters? The context let me know what you meant.
So once again, we're not English majors or anything like that.
No, but we write papers. You think we'd better with our words.
Yeah, I get a lot of editing in that, though.
Yeah, you could cut out all the audio about us talking about what words you should have used. And you could just say disillusioned right now and plug it in and we'd be good to go.
I'll plug in disillusioned, but then I'll also leave you correcting me so you just look like an ass.
So I just seem like, you mean disillusioned? Yeah, I said disillusioned.
Yeah.
Wow. It's true. I'm going to leave the bulk of the editing up to you. I could sound like a moron.
All right, so
Animal Farm specifically, mm-hmm. on the stuff you could Google. I guess the most interesting thing to me is that he had a hard time publishing it when he first wrote it, because England was still allied with the USSR at the time, mm-hmm. and it was kind of anti-Stalinist propaganda. No publishing companies in England would actually publish it. But the moment the war was over, and the communists weren't our friends, they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Western Republican powers are so staunch in their moral convictions.
Yeah, this was written in like 1943/44. They were wartime alliances with Soviet Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a very, I think, controversial book throughout most of its time. Maybe his most commonly read one. People might more often reference 1984, but I think more people just in school and stuff have read Animal Farm.
It's like a freshman English or junior high English common reading book.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't have to.
I didn't either. My school did not do a lot of the genre we're covering with this podcast, which is why it's a new thing for me to read all these books.
Well, I read some of these books previously, but not because of school,
mm-hmm.
just because I wanted to. But yeah, I think you're right. It's also shorter.
Yeah, which means this episode might be shorter. So we'll
maybe,
see.
But maybe not.
We could probably bloviate about various
things. Bloviate's a good word. Mm-hmm. That's the right word. Yeah. Pontificate.
Didn't learn that in
that
school.
That one's good. Bloviate?
Nope.
I learned that from Bill O'Reilly.
So one
good thing from Bill O'Reilly.
I guess the first topic that's good to talk about is all the representations in the book. Who represents what? Everything, kind of clarify that.
Yes.
Is there some who very clearly represent one person and then others who represent an idea or like a group of people, like Old Major?
You know what's really good for summarizing this too? The same place that we got a lot of the other information about Orwell, Wikipedia. Yeah, we talked about Old Major. He sort of represents a combination of Marx and Lenin.
Yeah.
Marx, of course, being kind of the father of communism and the writer of the Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital. And then Lenin was kind of the orchestrator of the Russian Revolution in 1917.
Mm-hmm. And then you get Napoleon, who represents Joseph Stalin, Snowball representing Trotsky.
Yeah.
You get...
If you don't know who Trotsky is, you could also look that up. But the reason you don't know who Trotsky is because Stalin took control and sort of kicked Trotsky out.
Exactly how the story goes. Yeah. You know what the story is based on. Squealer is kind of generally the propaganda machine that was at work in Soviet Russia.
That's what that one said. Mm-hmm. I sort of like Wikipedia makes a more direct comparison here to, and I'm not going to say this name right, Vyacheslav Molotov. Which was like Stalin's kind of right-hand propagandist.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, maybe Squealer does represent like a broader propaganda apparatus, but it could also be his minister of propaganda.
Yeah,
like a pretty direct parallel there.
Yeah, probably both. Squealer is his right-hand man, but he does pretty much 100% of all the propaganda work himself.
Yeah.
Once you get past them, yeah, there was a thing that original humans may be representing capitalists / the czars that got overthrown and former proletariat.
Yeah, I also think there is...
bourgeoisie. The bouge.
The bouge. Represented the bouge. I think there is some idea... The humans, especially towards the end, sort of represent the broad spectrum of Western capitalist powers that post-World War II Stalin had to negotiate with and deals with so that he could make territorial acquisitions and have control and stuff of certain things.
Which is a big part of how the pigs become no better than the humans.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of makes it seem like Orwell sort of saw like capitalist overlords and the Stalin is synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems fitting for who Orwell was.
Yeah, maybe gets into the horseshoe argument of going too far to the left or right.
Or maybe the authoritarian argument. I don't know. But maybe I say that because I don't like the horseshoe argument.
Maybe isn't the horseshoe argument basically if you go too far either way, you just end up with a totalitarian government?
Yeah, but I don't know what it means by like going too far. I'm not a political science expert. This isn't a political science, like, book club thing. We're talking about a book. Okay, fine, I'll go there. I'm just saying, like, there are base concepts on the right that favor towards nationalism and, like, once you go far right, I'm not talking about just, like, kind of right center, but you go straight towards, like, Nazis and fascism, they favor bigotry and ultra-nationalism and roll into hate. When you go, like, too far left, it's like, what is too far left? Oh, everyone's too equal, and we care about the inherent human dignity of everyone too much. It doesn't seem like there's a horseshoe that can be made there. I do get that you can take any political philosophy, and if it's used for bad authoritarian means, you can end up in a bad place. But I think there are key differences in different political philosophies, and they aren't all the same and don't inevitably end up in the same place.
Hmm.
That's my issue with the horseshoe.
Oh, yeah.
But there we go. And if we're running short on time, we'll just keep that there.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about that more at some point.
We should read the Chomsky book.
I like the horseshoe.
I don't like the horseshoe.
Yeah, I think it's
useful. I think it, yeah, well.
But anyway.
So Boxer super loyal, dedicated, hardworking horse who ends up getting hurt and turned into glue.
Mm-hmm. Which I had it highlighted in my book. After the battle of the cowshed, Squealer makes a statement that bravery is not enough. Loyalty and obedience are more important, which is kind of what Boxer represents. He is just obedient and loyal as possible and never questions anything. His two mottos are, I will work harder, and Napoleon is always right.
Yeah.
He kind of represents a uneducated working class or mass populace.
Maybe. I don't know. It's an allegory. They can represent whatever you want. Sort of.
Whatever you want within limits.
Yeah, like grammar, like within reason.
Yeah.
I like that he calls it a fairy story. That's the subtitle of the original like English publication. Because he makes it clear like how fanciful.
Yeah, it all is. And this is talking animals. And
we have talking animals.
Yeah.
And like, your suspension of disbelief is definitely vital to this operation.
Yep.
There are other horses.
Oh, yeah. What was that one? Mare's name. Yeah, who was obsessed with being pampered.
Yeah, I guess she, according to Wikipedia, and this makes sense, represents all the aristocracy and kind of the sycophants that were around the Tsar prior to the revolution. They just sort of left Russia.
Yeah, the petty bourgeoisie. Petty bourge.
Petty bourge.
Yeah, and I think maybe the last character really that's important to understand is Benjamin, the donkey, long-lived, who seems to understand everything that's going on, but is just so nihilistic.
Cynical and hopeless. Yeah, life will go on as it always goes on. That is, badly.
Yeah. Gonna get that tattooed.
Yeah. Cross my chest.
Yep.
Yes.
Know what I'm about.
Yeah. But in pretty letters.
Yeah.
So like it looks like a pretty tattoo, but then people read it.
His idea is kind of reinforced in that the only time he actually tries to step up and do anything is to save Boxer when he's getting sent away to be killed, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, like, the one time he actually does try to initiate change, it fails.
Yeah, I feel like I relate Benjamin, but then part of me doesn't want to.
Yeah, might, maybe, keys in on a bad part of who we are.
Yeah.
All right, so with the base allegory out of the way, is there a topic you wish to hit on?
We should outline, at least initially, the core tenets of animalism. Which animalism is the formal doctrine, philosophy that Snowball and Napoleon come up with after Old Major's death to prescribe to the animals how they should conduct themselves in their new governance.
And there was 7 of them, which are... One, whatever goes upon 2 legs is an enemy. 2, whatever goes upon 4 legs or has wings is a friend. Those 2 are simplified for the sheep together to be 4 legs good, 2 legs bad.
Yes.
Because they can't comprehend the more complex.
The sheep are stupid.
Yeah. Number 3.
This is important.
Yep. Number 3. No animals shall wear clothes. 4. No animal shall sleep in a bed. 5. No animal shall drink alcohol. 6. No animal shall kill another animal. And 7. All animals are equal.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Truly.
But just to keep it succinct, I did look up a list of how each of them get perversed over time, which not all of them get perversed.
Well, don't they sort of all get perverse because they end up getting condensed down to a single instruction?
Yeah, they all eventually all accumulates into all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
That's the world I like to live in.
Yeah. Which that, I think that saying's introduced towards the end whenever the pigs reveal that they can walk on 2 legs.
Yeah, but let's go through the changes.
Yeah.
I don't have a list of them right in front of me.
Yeah, the first one on this list is 4 legs good, 2 legs better.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I guess that one would be when they introduced that they could walk on their hind legs.
That's also like a direct contradiction
to the initial
Yeah, it goes upon two legs as an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the first one was that changed was about the bedding.
That might be the first one that appears in the book. This is just like the order in which they appear on this list I pulled up. Because it changes from no animal shall sleep in a bed to no animal shall sleep in a bed with sheets.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, the sheets.
The sheets are what makes it bougie.
Yeah. The sheets are what separate humans from animals, because I believe Squealer's argument was anything that you sleep on is a bed.
Straw is a bed, yeah,
if you sleep on it, which maybe gets into like Platonic metaphysics.
What is a bed?
Yeah.
All right. Ontologically, there's an issue with this instruction. Yeah. The next one, is it the no animal shall drink alcohol to excess?
Yes, it was originally no alcohol. Then the pigs decided alcohol.
Oh, yeah. This gets to the part about Stalin. We will probably make multiple plugs for this other podcast that both Colby and I listen to called Behind the Bastards. So Behind the Bastards is a podcast where this investigative journalist, Robert Evans, he does a bunch of research on different horrible, despicable people throughout history. It does like a one or two part episode on him.
Also, I guess you're welcome for the free plug, Robert Evans. I'm sure you'll listen to us at some point.
Yeah, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
No, we can't reference their jokes in our podcast.
No, it'll get meta. I don't know. We start going back and forth. No, okay.
This dies with us.
It did. What?
What?
Anyway, well, one of the first episodes was about Stalin, and basically he talks about how Stalin liked to drink constantly with his entire cabinet so that they couldn't orchestrate a coup against him. And I just thought that was really fitting, because apparently Napoleon starts to drink a lot. And all the pigs are just getting sloshed all the time.
Yeah.
Not even sure if Orwell knew that. Okay, so are those all the changes in animalism that...
Well, I'm trying to figure out this list that I pulled up.
I feel like there was one that changed about the no animal shall kill any other animal.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The list I have pulled up, I found on study.com. It lists no animal shall kill any other animal as tenet number 6 of the commandments. Yeah. And then under it in the list of things that got changed, it says no animal shall kill any other animal. Those are the exact same wordings. They have to justify it because Napoleon's basically starts having people executed.
Yeah. Oh, not even just has people executed. He just has a mass purge.
Yeah, where he gets them to like confess to crimes they didn't commit. Slaughters
dozens and dozens of animals, which are supposed to mimic Stalin's purges too.
Even to the extent I think he drove out most of the doctors in his cabinet and ended up having a stroke and no one to take care of him.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Yeah, I feel like I want to look that one up, because I feel like that one changes.
I think
it changed to like without cause.
I'm struggling to remember that one exactly. Well, luckily, with Kindle, you can just word search. And also, with the wonders of audio, we can edit out all this dead space.
About how we didn't know what it was. Yeah, no animal shall kill another animal without cause.
And without cause is in all caps. Kindle location 777.
Somehow,
good holy
or mind. Other, the last two words had slipped out of the animal's memory. But they saw now that the commandment had not been violated. For clearly, there was good reason for killing the traitors who had leagued themselves with Snowball.
Which, I think that also ties into one of the topics I wanted to talk about. One of the other horses, Clover.
Yeah, she could read.
Yeah, she could read, and she was pretty smart. And anytime one of the commandments changed, she knew it, but was convinced that she just misremembered.
Yes. I hadn't written it down as a topic, but just now I typed out memory ?
Which we have a very limited collective memory. You see it all the time in American culture now. People will be outraged about something online for a week or two.
Yeah.
And then it's just forgotten.
Also, we get used to things being normal so quickly. Our brain plays this trick on us. It conditions us so rapidly to just make sense of the world. Which, I think, had we been recording this podcast 3 years ago, we would not have quite as much ample fodder of this happening as we do now. For instance, it has been, I think, more than 200 days now since we have had a White House press briefing. Like a daily White House press briefing?
Yeah, if you want to be able to date this, the impeachment trials are going on for Trump.
Yeah.
In the Senate, specifically.
In which case, you're either listening to this from a bunker somewhere. I don't know, maybe Bernie Sanders won this coming year and everything's great. Not to lay my political cards on the table. But, yeah, for 50 years, there was this unbroken chain of their, well, essentially unbroken chain.
I'm sure they missed days every now and then.
Sure. This consistent practice of having daily White House press briefings. And then for now over half a year, they just have not happened. Every month or something, I'll see a random news article about it. But for the most part, like, just no one's talking about it, why it's problematic, whether it matters. I saw one article like a month ago. Every press secretary that's still alive signed an open letter saying why there should be daily White House press briefings and how they still did it even when they didn't want to, even when they were like under fire and everything was burning down around them. They still did it.
Well, how would you expect Trump to do that? I mean, he just needs to go play golf. You can't give
one of those
from a golf course.
You remember when people would lose their minds over the number of days that presidents spent on vacation or playing golf? And to be fair, I was usually one of those people that was like, well, it's a stressful job. If I were president, I'd probably spend a fifth of my time just out in an open, calming field too. The stuff that happens now is so insane. Like, the fact that Trump spends so much time golfing does not even...
And so much money.
Up to the standard.
He bragged about not taking the salary.
Oh my God.
And his golfing trips and vacations have added up to much more than that salary.
Pretty sure you could redo Flint's entire water system. And he enriches himself when he does it. Like, he goes to his own resorts. Anyway, all that to say, there's just all this stuff that has become normal that no one even cares about anymore. We're just so used to the corruption that we don't even point it out because our collective memory just is like, oh yeah, we get exhausted. I guess it's important to remember things.
Don't just forget about it.
Or to just do research.
Where the crap's Coney? Huh? We ever catch Coney? Facebook? Did that pan out for us? Or are we currently living in 2020 and he's still out recruiting children?
Remember when we thought 2016 was just a bad year?
Oh, man.
I would take 2016 back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, so social memory, we forget about things. And then also this case, what this book is representing with Soviet Russia, the powers that be, the quote I think you see in 1984 is, those who control the present control the past. And so the past, whatever you allow to fall out of your social memory, becomes whatever those in power tell you it was.
Yeah, like how our founding fathers were all super good Christians and wanted us to have essentially a Christian theocracy.
Pretty much. I also just watched the episode of The Office today where they have a Benjamin Franklin impersonator coming to the office. And Michael Scott is convinced that Benjamin Franklin was a president.
Yeah.
Which I remember having that misconception in like elementary school.
Yeah. I remember thinking that when I was like 9.
Yeah, because you list the founding fathers, and he's in there, and most
all
of the
founding fathers,
presidents,
except for Alexander Hamilton.
Honestly, I didn't learn about him until the
musical. I remember the blurb about him from fifth grade. I've also been reading the Federalist Papers, and now I'm not as impressed with Alexander Hamilton. I mean, super smart, dope writer, like deserved to be in some kind of prestigious whatever he did. Jordan, you'll agree with me, because now I have to be the only person listening to this podcast.
Hi, Jordan.
Authority and power corrupts is another note.
We can avoid the horseshoe.
Like, we just can't use the word horseshoe. It's also in poor taste considering what happens to Boxer.
RIP. Hashtag.
Hashtag remember Boxer. Yeah.
I stopped myself from doing a Harambe reference.
2016, what a good year.
The memes were so dank.
Epstein didn't kill himself. Memes have been pretty choice.
They have. I would consider myself a pretty dank memer. The sanctity of life ones are ones that I'll look at and I will laugh, but I'll feel bad about it. Which,
that is really off topic. I don't see what that has to do with authority corrupting.
Nope, probably going to delete
power.
Most of that.
Yeah.
And
or
gonna...
you could leave it there. I mean, I've been listening to podcasts.
That's for the Patreons.
I don't know what the... Yes. Do you want to hear our random tirades? Give us a dollar.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
You need to do this for free instead of at a deficit?
Like, broke even. Cool. But if you donate more, we can get better audio equipment. Because that's what every podcast says. Yeah, authority and power corrupting. Because I think that's Orwell's thing. That's why no single political ideology can necessarily claim Orwell and be like, yeah, he's against communism, or he's against anarchy, or he's against capitalism. It's like, no, he's just against asshole. Orwell doesn't really care necessarily what your politics is, as long as you're not an asshole. Because Snowball, he initially at the beginning of the book, he's trying to educate everyone, get everyone so that they can read. So there's like this educated proletariat to keep things from getting corrupt.
And he has a long-term idea as opposed to Napoleon short-term with the windmill.
Yeah.
That will ultimately benefit everybody more because they'll have to do less work. And we're entering into alone time with Michael as Jacob goes to urinate. How are y'all doing today? You feeling good? You enjoying life? I hope you are. More specifically, I hope you enjoy the probably 45 minutes to an hour that this podcast is. I don't know what it'll be after editing down all the silence and everything. Judging by the visual layout of this audio, it doesn't look like you all can pick up Jacob's urination, but I assure you, it is quite loud, and it's still going. And it finished. Oh, got a little loop of the toilet flushing.
Do you need to not record over my urination breaks? That way for the Patreons, we can have a special episode every season. There's just 40 minutes of unbroken, like, Jacob urinating.
Yeah. Sadly, at least if the visual representation of the layout is accurate, it's not picking up the urination.
Oh, it's not?
There's a very tiny blimp of the toilet flushing.
That's weird, because the first one we recorded totally got me peeing in the back.
Yeah, it might. We have to go back and listen to it.
All right. So power corrupting authority. Authority corrupting power.
Yeah, the cliches become cliche because people find truth in them constantly. So true. Yeah, that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
We don't want to say anything more about that. Colby basically summarized that. That's Orwell's basic point of the whole book. Don't even have to read it at this point.
And that's actually the end of this podcast forever. Bye.
It's the lesson forever.
Yeah, part of me likes to imagine that God made me lower class because he knew I couldn't handle such power and authority.
Yeah, I'd be a horrible person. If I were Jeff Bezos, I would be Jeff Bezos. That's how bad of a person I would be.
I like to imagine at least I would still be able to convince myself I'm a good person. All my abuses of my money and power, I would be able to self-justify.
Oh, absolutely.
I would never be able to do something that outright contradicted my ideas. I'd always have to subvert, which I guess one views themselves as a bad guy, so everyone knows
Hitler
that.
Thought he was a good person.
I imagine he did a lot for animal rights in Germany, from what I hear. He probably focused on that.
And even if you do something horrible, it's the same way that I'm able to rationalize my much smaller scale. I know consuming a large amount of meat is not, like, ecologically sustainable. I still do it, and somehow I'm able to make it okay in my brain. There's all sorts of little things about the way I live my life. Like, if every human on the planet lived the way I did, the planet would burst into a ball of flames. Like, the only way I'm able to live the way that I do is because there's 4 to 6 other billion people who live off of $2 a day.
Yeah.
Only way it works.
And if everyone tried to live like we do, our AI overlords would just hit reset on the simulation and we would go back to 2011.
2016. I think that's where it starts.
I want like 5 good years before things
evolve.
Before
2016?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just starting college. I was making new lifelong friends.
Yeah, whatever.
Things hadn't gone downhill quite as much.
I don't remember it super well. I just know it wasn't that awesome.
But all of that does go into what the book ends on. And I think I have highlighted, which we mentioned before, but the exact quote from the book is, "The creatures outside looked from pig to man, and from man to pig, and from pig to man again. But already it was impossible to say which was which." I'm really proud of Orwell there. He was able to work in a semicolon. And anytime I throw in a semicolon when I write a paper, I feel super smart. I'm like, man, this one semicolon just bumped me up like half a letter grade.
I mean, to be fair, I never actually really use semicolons because I know they're sort of like this in between a period and a comma thing.
It is for two phrases that are complete thoughts and thus complete sentences within themselves, but are very strongly related.
Yes. Yeah. I see. I know that, but I never feel good about using one. So good for you. The power of a semicolon.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the name of this episode.
I just realized we were going to name episodes. In the back of my mind, I assume we're just going to name it the title of the book.
Basically. Oh, no. We got to have, like, clever names. Like,
yeah. The clever name, and then maybe the book in parentheses.
So people know what it's actually about.
Mm-hmm.
Because the title won't actually make any sense. Because somebody's going to listen to this episode and be like, is a semicolon going to show up? Like, when's that going to happen?
At the very last sentence of the book.
They had me. Yes.
Also, I'm sure me cracking my knuckles is wonderful audio.
See, this is why you need to donate to the Patreon. This is going to be our ad. Like, it's just us busting our knuckles.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why you have to donate to the Patreon, so we don't have to use this freaking omnidirectional mic that we got to Skype in our friends for D&D.
Yeah, because we're nerds. Let's get real quiet for a second. I want to see if it pops up on the screen.
Cool.
Yep, it does. Hope y'all enjoyed that.
Yeah, you couldn't tell the pigs or the humans apart.
I don't know. Obviously, if there is an easy solution for that, humanity wouldn't be what it is.
I think the solution was why Snowball got kicked out. Like, I think the solution is having an educated populace that engages in political discourse frequently.
It seems negative of general human beings for me, but I know the justification of a republic versus a pure democracy is the concept of actually educated representatives being able to, and I think they use the phrase of like greater.
You want me to lay down some Madison quotes because I've been reading the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
It's weird, Colby. I've oddly just been reading this. Like, all this rationalization.
Yeah, which I can kind of get.
Oh, but it's worse.
Pure democracy is a mob rule, but also when you discount the average person as being incapable of governing themselves.
Right. They make a pretty good argument. There's a pretty good historical argument for why we shouldn't have pure democracies and that they are inherently unstable. Not questioning that. I will question that some of the rationality for the Founding Fathers was that they were just some rich white assholes. So I can't remember exactly which Federalist paper this one is. It's in the first dozen or something because I've only made it to like 19 or something like that. Five of those are super boring because Hamilton's just giving you a complete history of why Confederacies suck. But yeah, so this is James Madison writing one of the first dozen Federalist Papers at the beginning. But the most common and durable source of factions has been the various and unequal distribution of property. Those who hold, those who are without property, have ever formed distinct interests in society. Those who are creditors and those who are debtors fall under light discrimination. A landed interest, a manufacturing interest, a mercantile interest, a moneyed interest, with many lesser interests, grow up of the necessity in civilized nations, and divide then into different classes actuated by different sentiments and views. The inference from this, which we have brought, is that the causes of faction cannot be removed, and that relief is only to be sought in the means of controlling its effects. Hence, it is that such democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security of the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. A rage for paper money, for an abolition of debts, for an equal division of property, or for any other improper and wicked project will be less apt to pervade the whole body of a union than the particular members of it, in the same proportion as such malady is more likely to taint a particular county or district than an entire state. So yeah, some of the rationality for a republic is just so, like, rich property-owning people can keep their same rich property, and all the poor people can't get together in, like, some democratic action and overthrow them.
Also, saw a tweet a while ago. Remember when we used to think the problem with the masses was the lack of information? Then we invented the internet? That wasn't it.
That wasn't... Yeah, like when I am voting or deciding who to vote for as a candidate, I want them to be smarter.
Yeah.
Like one of the biggest issues is when I watch a debate and I hear a candidate and I was like, you know what? what? I think I know more than you. Objectively, I think I know more than you. I think I think better than you. I'm not going to vote for you because I think you would do a worse job than me.
And I would do a terrible job.
And I would be awful. Apparently not everybody in the country thinks that way.
Yeah, I do not know about all the implications of international trade agreements. I need someone who actually understands those things.
Yeah, right. That's the part of the rationalization of, like, the Founding Fathers and the Federalist Papers I get. You totally want the cream of the crop running everything. We should totally elevate the people out of our population who seem the most proficient and the most adept, but also the most virtuous, into positions of authority and control.
Which is, in Animal Farm, the pigs were the inherently most intelligent animals.
That's true.
They learn to write and read quicker than any of the other ones. They're able to formulate moving things. They just lack the virtuous aspect.
Yeah, but I think that is where the part of Snowball comes in. Even if you acknowledge there may be better people to be in elected positions, you should still try to take every precaution you can and make sure as many people are literate and capable, because the democracy should be a check on the republic or something like that. You should try to make sure people are as educated and well-informed as they can be.
Which, showing my hands and my thoughts on the impeachment trial.
Oh, okay.
No, not Chomsky. I could get into Chomsky, but with the Bill Clinton impeachment, the Democrats who were defending him at the time, they leaned heavily on just hoping that the general public was ill-informed. And so they bit their half-truths in defending him and everything. And that's exactly what the Republicans are doing now to defend Trump. A large part of their argument is hoping that the general public is ill-informed, that they do not know a lot of the actual facts. And so that's why you get them making arguments of Trump made a phone call saying he didn't want a quid pro quo. That's a big argument that the Republicans have made.
Why did he make that argument?
He had that phone call.
Oh, no. Yeah,
but
right.
Then it turned out, he only made that phone call immediately after the complaint was brought about by the whistleblower. And the Democrats did it in the Clinton trial. The Republicans are doing it now in the Trump trial. They rely on disinformation. They rely on the general public not actually knowing all the facts.
And I have a question. Do you think satire will save our republic? Maybe that's what's missing in Animal Farm. There is no satirist. I have seen some articles about how basically satire is sort of holding our democracy together. Because
loosely.
Yeah. Because they're like sort of able to actually address truth because they do it in this disarming way. So part of the nature of the comedy of satire is pointing out truth.
I watched so much more of the Colbert Report in high school than I ever did of any other news site.
When Jon Stewart was still on The Daily Show, I remember there was some stat that came out that was like 80% of people under the age of 30 who regularly consume news, their primary news source is The Daily Show.
Yeah.
That's not how it should be.
It's not.
Even though Jon Stewart is super smart, like if you ever watch him just in like a debate setting or like an interview setting, brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you get satire with A Modest Proposal. Yeah, like you said, it brings up harsh realities in more acceptable ways. Making it something you can laugh at makes it easier to actually engage. Yeah,
yeah.
Even if it's super terrible. I've heard people complain about modern satire being too dark and upsetting and not working. A Modest Proposal was literally about eating babies. He went into great detail on how to, like...
Modest Proposal.
Oh, it was, I want to believe, an Irishman.
I love this. Learn me some stuff, Colby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by Jonathan Swift. Giving you a quick wiki. A Modest Proposal for preventing the children of poor people from being a burden to their parents or country. And so...
Oh, God.
Yeah, the proposal is, well, if we just eat the babies, then the adults will have food. We won't be malnourished anymore, and we won't have these babies. Gosh, I want to say Irish, but I feel like I'm just being racist, and it might be Scottish. It was during England's oppression of the people, and they just weren't getting enough resources to sustain a society. Swift's essay is widely held to be one of the greatest examples of sustained irony in the history of the English language. A healthy child, well-nursed, is, at a year old, a most delicious, nourishing, and wholesome food, whether stewed, roasted, baked, or boiled, and I make no doubt that it will equally serve in a frinskesi or a ragu.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so people were starving to death, and so he wrote this satirical article. He went into great detail of fattening them up and like what ages were best to eat them and how to prepare them best.
Okay.
Just got real dark.
Yeah.
For whatever dystopia I didn't read in high school, we read that.
You read that in high school?
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like Michael and my solution to preventing corrupt authoritarian sycophants to take over our republic is to lean really hard into satire.
Yeah.
And so I guess we're really endorsing Colbert Report.
If Stephen Colbert ran for president, I would vote for him.
I would not. Stephen Colbert is basically a conservative compared to me, but whatever. John Oliver, Last Week Tonight, dude, that's awesome stuff.
So either we need to lean super heavily into sporting satire to go against Wheeler disinformation, or we start putting an emphasis back on humanities and values and what does it mean to have meaning and everything.
Oh, well, we're going to have to do that. Like, once all the jobs are automated and half the population is trying to figure out what they do when they don't have a, like, socially constructed purpose by fulfilling an occupational function,
mm-hmm.
and like we'll have to then self-define their lives. Yeah, we'll have to have that. I think there's going to be a resurgence in the humanities in the next 20 years, but that's just me.
Hopefully that.
Yeah, that would be
job.
Really great for you.
All right, Andrew Yang.
Ching.
Oh, well, we are at 113 and a half.
So what do you rate the book?
The book.
Because we think our solution is satire. Like, we think that was Orwell's missing piece. Probably the same in 1984, too.
Yeah, I bet Orwell hadn't read A Modest Proposal. If he had read it, then, you know, things would have been different. Books would have
been different.
Yeah, he would have had a satirical character in both Animal Farm and 1984.
I don't know. Maybe that's why you should read Amish Catalonia. He is a satirical character. In Amish Catalonia, he talks about how Spanish aim saved his life because basically no one could hit anything.
Okay.
There's like volleys of... Well, he also talks about how like the paving stones that were used to build the roads in Barcelona were so well equipped to be pulled up and built into barricades, and then you could take the barricade apart and rebuild the road in a day. And like how he talks about the May Day fighting in like 33 or whatever between the different leftist factions in Barcelona, and how everybody just knew where and not to go because they did this all the time. And so, I don't know, Amish Catalonia is actually pretty funny because it's pretty satirical and cynical throughout the whole book. So I think George Orwell had like satirical perspective on things. I think that is kind of the character of Benjamin, this truth-speaking, cynical, satirical character talking about everything. So maybe satire isn't the solution.
Maybe. Last episode, I believe it gave Brave New World King, because we're doing that super pretentious rating system.
Yeah.
We know what we're about. I think I'm going to give Animal Farm a 10.
Yes.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I feel like a 10 seems so much lower than a king, which maybe it is. I liked Brave New World a lot, but it's still good. I'm glad I read it.
Yes.
If I thought this was a bad book, I'd be giving it a
like
2 or 3 or something.
Yeah.
It's a really good book, worth reading. I'm glad it's apparently fundamental in a lot of people's educational system, although it wasn't part of mine.
I'm going to give it a 10 of diamonds.
Not of clubs. Clubs is the best.
Yeah. I don't know what the scaling system actually is, but for some reason, diamonds seems like the right suit for it to be in. But yeah, good book. Glad I read it. I had not read it in my younger formative years, probably because I went to a super conservative high school. Didn't read Brave New World either, and apparently a bunch of people read that in high school.
Who reads that in high school? They have orgies. Orgy porgy is a phrase common in that book.
Well, they also read they also read Fahrenheit 451 too, and we're gonna read that. Basically, we are reading all the books that everyone else we went to university with read in high school, and we didn't.
Yeah, apparently.
That's what's happening.
We went states away to different high schools.
I went to a pretty decent high school.
I did not.
Like, it was a well-funded, I mean, it was rural, but it was like a well-funded high school from where it was. And like, I don't feel bad about my high school education, but I do think it's weird that we just didn't read these books. For some reason, like, I remember reading, there's a Patrick Swayze movie that they made out of it.
Swayze?
Yeah. Yeah, like Stay Gold Pony or whatever. No, maybe it's the others. Anyway, and we read like a bunch of Shakespeare, and I remember reading like Grapes of Wrath and stuff like that. No, we didn't read any Brave New World or Fahrenheit 451 or 1984 or Animal Farm.
Yeah, most of my high school I ever got into sci-fi. It was a short story called Old Math and watching the movie Gattaca.
Oh, yeah, Gattaca's good.
Yeah, we watched that.
I wonder if we could do, like, a gap season where we watch a couple dystopia movies. Because those would be pretty easy to do, just because they're only two-hour-long movies. It's just, like, I would really like to do the contrast between Gattaca and Sorry to Bother You.
Okay.
Because Gattaca almost seems like a utopia compared to Sorry to Bother You.
I don't know if I ever want to watch Sorry to Bother You again.
Although Sorry to Bother You sort of, I guess you don't have to use Sorry to Bother You as the contrast. You could use Brave New World, because Brave New World is the same kind of idea. A genetically modified lower class to do all the brute labor.
Yeah, which, I want to clarify my statement. Sorry to Bother You is a great movie, I think. It makes a great analysis and point, and pretty much everyone should watch it. It took such an upsetting turn that I don't know if I can emotionally handle it again.
You're going to get two-thirds of the way through that movie and be like, what? And then 5 minutes after that, you're going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It, like, gets bad, and then it takes such a hard, drastic turn.
Yeah, it's just worse. Straight off a deep, dark ledge.
Oh, man. I love it.
Yeah. So, we both give it a 10.
Yeah.
Of diamonds. Yeah, looking forward to next episode reading 1984. Yeah, also by Orwell. In the stuff you can Google yourself section, going to get a lot of repeat info, I suppose. Yeah.
Also, I want to plug Amish Catalonia. I think it was really elucidating for just Orwell's writing. It seems like the most entertaining way to read about the Spanish Civil War and learn a lot about that moment in world history.
Yeah, probably set up a Patreon before this happens. And I imagine Ace of Clubs will be a free name. So Patreon Ace of Clubs. Google that. You'll probably find it.
And if not, we'll end it over this, but the actual name.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, all right. Whatever happens.
So next episode is 1984 and closing statement.
Next time on Ace of Clubs.
Next time on Ace of Clubs. Wow, Colby, you're so smart.
Brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you. And if you would like to suggest books, genres, or just let us know your thoughts on whatever we have already read, you can hit us up at theaceofclubsp1 on Twitter or email us at theaceofclubsp1@gmail.com. You can find this program anywhere you get your podcasts.
Also, if you would like to see us pretend to be other people, you can join us on Twitch every Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern for our live play tabletop RPG stream, RPGs Anonymous, or listen to the podcast anywhere you get the Ace of Clubs.
Also, we're going to start doing shout outs and responding to questions on the Ace of Clubs for those of you who give us good reviews on iTunes, because we got to play that game. So if you'd like to be featured on our show, you now know how to achieve that goal.
Next time, we'll be discussing 1984 by Orwell, and we really mean it this time.
Thanks for joining us, and as always, just keep reading.